97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the podcast exclusive of Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors. Tony Colombo here with producer Chad Ellis, my partner Bo Matthews, and our buddy Mike Marfell, the professional fisherman. We're going to talk a little fishing on today's podcast exclusive. Mike, how's it going?
Awesome, man. Awesome, man. It's a good time to be talking fish.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Bo, we were getting things set up here to record this podcast. We could have just clipped that whole conversation. And it was perfect.
And we would have been done.
Right?
Holy crap.
No, it's absolutely. It's a great time to talk fishing. There's a lot happening. And, Mike, you have a really cool story about the most recent tournament that you were in at the Lake of the Ozarks. Tell us that story.
Well, it's really cool, man. I wish I would have done it, but I didn't execute. So if people that don't know, the BFL tournament is a pro-am format where you draw a random co-angler to be in the back of your boat.
Yep.
And then after, on these BFL supers, day two, they cut to the top 20%. So in this case, we had like 119 boats. So it was like top 23. I squeaked in that last place spot. Fishing has been pretty tough. The beginning of the fall transition from summer to fall, if you can imagine what that does, that scatters the fish. There's some still in their summer pattern, some moving back, some already got to the backs, and they're all chasing. It's all bait related. They're chasing the bait, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I squeaked in there, but so on day two, or I'm sorry, let me back up a second. On the end of that first day, I had four fish in the live well. And like I was telling you, I didn't want to go to my juicy spot. I'd normally save that for when I don't have a co-angler in the boat. But I needed another fish, and I went in there. Second skip under a dock, caught a nice keeper. But
did
this
you
was afternoon
him?
By this time. No, I didn't. But I made him swear to secrecy. But he was like, "Well, now I know why you like to come in here, because second skip I caught one," and I was like, "Yeah." But the sun was up, and it's a shallow area. It gets to where it's just like 3 or 4 feet deep. And I made a lap, so to speak, through there, and I didn't catch a fish, but I seen the giant gizzard shad, the 6 to 8 inch gizzard shad back there, super shallow on the seawall. And I didn't say anything to him, but I thought to myself, well, I know where I'm starting tomorrow morning if I make it, but I didn't think I was going to make it, at the time. Turns out I did make it. And I went in there on day two, first thing, I had three nice keepers, one about 4.5, one about 3, and one about almost 3. My team partner, or co-angler, he was in last place also, so they placed 23rd with 23rd and on up to first with first.
Oh, so it's not a boat situation. You guys are actually, even though you're in the same boat and kind of on the same team,
he's fishing against the other people in the back of the boat, and I'm fishing against the other people in the front of the boat.
Gotcha. Yep. Gotcha. Yep. Okay.
So it's not a team. It's not a team thing. He's fishing for his five. I'm fishing for mine. He's fishing against the guys in the back of other people's boats.
Right. Got it.
And I'm fishing for. So I didn't. He had a 5-pounder and about a 2-pounder. So in the co-angler world, that goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, all right, well, let's let this rest just a hair. We went and fished in another little spot close by and then came back. Because once you've driven your boat through that shallow area, it's probably best to let it rest a minute.
Sure.
And I had my three and he had two by 7:20 in the morning. We took off at a little before 7. And I told him as we were catching him, I was like, there's people still running, people that are going to the dam or to the river, and we've already got fish. Mm-hmm. And I went back through there, and this isn't hyperbole. I'm guessing that it was a 5-pound bass or the way I was fishing, I was swimming that jig down the side of docks. I physically seen them come out and eat it. And then I seen them turn and run right back into those boat stalls. And long story short, they broke me off. I had two do that. And then one that I pitched up super shallow and didn't have my boat planted with my talons. So when I hooked him, I was worried about, there's no way to get my boat back there. I cast it basically over a dock into some jet ski slips. And he came right at me another one. I could see him. He was a good 5 pounds. Went right into the wood on the dock and was just sawing on a, you could just hear it sawing and pow, went off like a shotgun. Lost that one. So, you know, it happens. That's fishing. I'm around the right fish, so I'm not worried about it. Long story short, I didn't execute, and I probably wouldn't have won, but I'd have gave him a scare. I estimated I'd have had about 21 pounds, which would have got me real close to the win. But my co-angler, he did. He caught two more nice ones that day, and he ended up coming from dead last to win the whole thing.
That's
so
awesome.
Whoa, that's great. That's why they should call it catching instead of fishing, because then you would catch them all.
And I know that you say, I know that you say that you that he won, you didn't win, but obviously, if it wasn't for you, that wouldn't have happened for him.
I've got multiple texts from him and phone calls thanking me again. And just wanting to, you know, he's a local. He's a retired school teacher out of Kansas City, and he lives down there at the lake, and he retired there. And cool part of that was his first ever win.
Yeah.
And his wife was his biggest fan. He lost her to cancer about, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. So, and she left him a little nest egg to buy himself a new bass boat. She kind of told him that on her while she was in the hospital. So,
oh my God.
He was in a kind of an emotional about it. And that made me, how could you not? And we became friends.
Yeah.
We became pretty good friends. We had a lot in common, you know? And, I'll be hanging out with Terry when I go down there, you know, more times up, you know, always look him up or whatever. And then, you know what I told you, I didn't fish the co-angler thing for a long time or the BFL format, but man, I had a really good run this year, not as far as performance, but meeting good people.
Yeah.
You know, both the guys I had was the first guy in the day one was his name was Kirk, and he's a young guy, has his own small landscaping business, super cool kid. And then he's like in his early 20s. And then Terry's a retired school teacher. Same thing. Super cool guy. Very knowledgeable. Very respectful. He would even ask me, this thing in the center is a step, right? Because I've been stepping over it, but is it okay? I'm getting older. That's a step, Terry.
That's what it's there for.
You know, this boat's shiny and new. I didn't want to. I was like, I appreciate it, but yeah, that's a step.
So for all the avid fishermen out there that that are looking to just gain that, you know, extra knowledge, there's bass fishing on television. There's great YouTube channels like 10 Horse Monty. That you're a part of, that people can go to and learn from. But how much knowledge can guys gain from entering these co-angler tournaments and fishing with a pro?
Oh, my God, it's invaluable. Yeah, it's great. It's the best way to learn. Watching on YouTube's great and getting ideas, but physically getting out there and doing it is, that's what it is. And, you know, then you pick each other's brain. He was asking me questions and, you know, all my guitar player friends, and I'm sure Perry would tell you the same thing, that when you teach somebody, you learn more than when you just play. Because people start asking questions. You forget why you do things, but when someone asks you why we're doing what we're doing, you got to stop and think about it. You got to question yourself. So
you can learn a lot from watching. Just last weekend, Tony and I were at the Shoot for the Troops thing. I hadn't shot skeet in 10 years or better. It's been a year or two since Tony had shot. Tony, I watched you, man. I watched you and how you were doing it, and I thought, okay, I'm going to learn a little bit. And as the day progressed or the time that we did this progressed, I learned a lot, and I was getting a little bit better at it just by learning, just by watching you. I learned a lot.
Watching me was the wrong guy to watch, Bo.
You weren't the only one.
I haven't shot in a million years either. My grandfather used to own a trap shoot growing up when we were kids, and yeah, my dad and my brother. You know, my dad's passed, but my brother's still just ridiculously good at trap, just because we grew up doing it. You know, grandfather had a 5-trap trap house, so we could go shoot whenever we wanted, you know.
That's amazing. Yeah, we had a lot of fun at the Joshua Chamberlain event, Shoot for the Troops. But man, I was rusty. We got a little bit better as the day went on.
Dude, I thought you were awesome.
Oh, whatever.
But you know what? Just like some of one guy was explaining that, you know, out of 56 clays, the two contenders both hit 55 to tie, and they tried to do a shoot-off, and that didn't work. So my point is Tony, thanks for doing what you did, because I learned a lot. Heck, I showed up to do it. But it's just like anything. It's like working on a car or whatever. Yeah. It's better to watch in person.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Mike, how much, you said it's a great time to be out on the water. How long do we have this window of, like, great fishing time?
Till it freezes.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the peak of it's going to be up and through, say, Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then you got to be a little more hardcore to be out there. Fishing will still be good, but, the conditions aren't for everybody. But this fall transition, when they go back to feed, that's what they're back there. They know winter's coming. And you know, I was asked about the water temperature and stuff. And in my opinion, it's the length of days that matter more. These days are getting shorter. The fish realize it. It's much like in the spring when they're getting longer. They realize it's time to move up and spawn. Mm. When the days start getting shorter, they realize that their days are numbered before the water starts cooling off. So they're going to feed up for the winter.
So they want to eat. They want to eat now.
They want to eat now. They eat. That's what they're doing. You catch them coming up schooling. They were very aggressive. Even when I'd catch one that was in practice, like a 14-incher, I would have swore to you it was 3 pounds because they were hitting it like a freight train. Mm-hmm. Like it was just. Mm-hmm. You know, it was good, and it hadn't been good. It'd been a struggle, and it was a struggle during our tournament. I mean, normally it takes 19 to 20 pounds a day to stick around down there, but this is a weird time where the fish are scattered. So I snuck in with 11-2, and then I only had three fish on the second day, and I still managed to jump up from 23rd to 17th. So it wasn't a typical Lake of the Ozarks, but it's happening. And what's funny about that is when I got back, okay, so my co-angler comes all the way back, and I should have had I not been an egghead and lost those fish. I look at my phone. You know how you'll get your phone, it'll say, oh, on this date 2 years ago. So this was Monday. It was on this date 2 years ago, and it was me leading the Web Outdoors Championship at Lake of the Ozarks exactly 2 years to the day. And I was fishing the same area. So if that tells you anything about those length of days, like the fish were in the same areas.
Wow, yeah.
As they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's amazing. So,
and the water temperature was significantly warmer this year than it was when I did that 2 years ago. But it kind of proves my point that I think length of days makes a bigger difference. And being around those big gizzard shad. When I was catching just keepers, I was around lots and lots of bait. But it was just that 1 and 2 inch long big balls of it. What you want when they get shallow is the big gizzard shad, because big bass feed on those big gizzard shad.
Yeah, if you see those
at Lake of the Ozarks, put your trolling motor down and start fishing. Yeah. The big girls are close.
Yeah, if you see the food, the fish are there. Bo, did you want to take this opportunity to announce the public tournament that you're going to host at your house, your lake?
You know, I hope nobody ever listens to this podcast. Why are you so fixated on? You know what? My neighbor and I have already fished all the fish out of it,
That's
so don't you even worry about
That's
it.
A fact. That's a fact.
That's awesome.
Wow. There's no fish.
Awesome. No, here's the problem.
Pond. There's no fish in that pond.
Here's the problem with your words. You have to understand, if you open it up to the public for one day, it will then be a public lake forever. And I'm not doing it.
I know. I'm joking.
That's why I got my scope all dialed in on my AR. Yeah,
you can't even get on the property. You can't even get on the property. There's anybody that even tried, except for the neighbor.
Bo,
he knows how to do it.
You got the different colored dots paint on the back of the tree, so you know the yardage too for your AR. That way you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If he didn't before,
you know, it's funny.
Now.
I was just on this podcast exclusive, guys. I was actually going to open up an invitation just for you two and Chad to come out and fish, but you know what? It's over. We're not doing it.
You should still invite Mike
anything,
and Chad. Bro. Yeah. Don't hold it against Mike and Chad.
One suffers, we all suffer.
The team loses. You know, if I lose, the team loses. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Mike, what are we only have a couple minutes left. What are some of the biggest differences right now for people if they're going out on the water, and the last time they were out, it was, you know, still 95, 100 degrees outside. What are some of the just common sense changes that you make, you know, as the weather changes?
Sure. Fish are feeding up. They're not going to, they might be on the bottom or they're going to be more suspended feeding up on that shad. So you want to fish something up in the water column. Now, when I go back and fish shallow like that, it doesn't matter. If the water's only 3 feet deep and they're setting it a foot and a half, well, they can go up or down just as easy. But if you're fishing over a little bit deeper water, say some of those commercial docks in your cove that you were speaking of, you know, out there on that point, mm-hmm. when you get out to the tip of those, what, Tony, 28, 30 foot deep out there, the fish are going to be out there, but they're not going to be in the bottom. They're going to be a foot and a half, 2 feet deep underneath those things. So top water, spinnerbait, you know, my preference is to swim a jig just because I can skip it places, you know. So they're going to be feeding up, and they're going to be migrating to the backs of the cove. So I would start at the back and work my way out if the wind was blowing into that cove,
mm-hmm.
you know, or concentrate on that back third. That doesn't mean that there's not some fish still out deep on the summertime pattern, but the actively feeding fish, the ones that are a little easier to catch, they're going to be towards the backs and they're going to be feeding up. You can throw a buzzbait, a spook, a whopper plopper, or something, you know, a jerk bait. I had a couple friends do really well on a jerk bait, moving it really, really fast.
Man, I had a big day.
Like you do in the winter.
I had a big day with the whopper plopper about 3 weeks ago. I think I talked a little bit about it on the show.
Was that all the pictures of you and Perry with?
Yeah, I mean, oh my gosh, it couldn't miss. I mean, there was a couple spots where we were fishing that day where there was some dead trees down in the water, a lot of branches dangling around, and I mean, if you ran that thing through there just right, just about every time through one of those areas, that thing was getting
especially when you're on
up.
A lake like what you were on that's not as pressured as Lake of the Ozarks and hasn't seen a bazillion whopper ploppers.
Yeah,
But I started the day with their mom, and that their subdivision pond, it's lights out with that thing.
Right.
You go out there right at dusk, it just lights out.
Yeah. I started the day, though, running a buzzbait through there, and they weren't really hitting it. And I don't know if the time...
It's that sound.
I don't know if it was the lure or if it was just because a couple hours had gone by and now it was a different time of the day. But when I switched the approach there... when I switched the top water that I was using from the buzzbait to the whopper plopper, it made all the difference in the world. It was crazy.
Plus, you can bomb that whopper plopper. You can cover so much more water. It casts so far with that thing.
Heck yeah. When was the last time you tied on a whopper plopper?
Never in my life. have you heard of the pole shaker? A buddy of mine created a lure called the pole shaker. Are you Ooh. Familiar with this?
No, but
I am not.
Sure
to answer.
Yeah, but let's get us some.
you know what? That get us some. Radio freebies.
Tell us how
you
to
know
buy
what? Maybe we can get him on as a guest in the next week or two. Troy DeRusse is his name.
For sure.
And good guy. You know, just loves fishing and hunting. And he just came out with his new thing. And when I first saw the name Pole Shaker, I thought, is this an advertisement for a strip club? I don't know what's going on here.
The name of my strip club is going to be the Pole Barn. Yeah.
Really? You must have a really good wife.
Do you know
you
what
got
type?
The coolest wife in the world.
Do you know what type of lure it is? Is it a topwater? Is it a... Do you know any of those details?
No, I don't.
All right, we're going to figure it out. We're going to figure out what the pole shaker is.
Yeah,
I'm always game to try new stuff, for sure.
Amen, right? So, Mike, before we let you go, before we wrap this up, I mentioned the 10 Horse Monty YouTube channel. I got a chance to watch a good chunk of your
live stream
that you did earlier this week on that channel.
Yep.
How can people...
Yeah, you can tune in.
Yeah,
just tune in. It's 10horsemonty.com on his YouTube page, Facebook page. We just dropped day one. Of our practice at Pickwick at the Toyota Owners Tournament and the Toyota Owners Meeting. And then he had that live stream, which is like it's Joe Rogan length. It's like 2 hours and 10 minutes or something of us talking fishing Monday night.
Yeah.
And then yesterday he just dropped our practice for this BFL tournament we were just talking. And then he'll be dropping day two of both Toyota and the BFL here in the near future. I don't think a lot of people realize how much work. I mean, he was up till 2 a.m. editing that stuff. I'm sure Chad understands.
Every bit of it. Yeah.
You're trying to make it interesting and, you know, enough fish catches and, you know, that sort of thing. So, and it's really funny from my perspective because there's like some inside jokes in there on some of that stuff. Like, for example, Tony, we're in the back of a cove and a guy said, hey, that point up there, we always catch 5-pounders. So we're on our way up there, right? And Gabe put this in the video. He hooks one and I lean over and go, is it a 5-pounder? You know, and like, I don't know if anybody caught that, but I always get that a lot. We catch 5-pounders off of this dock all the time, and we all know that the definition of a 5-pounder to me is not the same as it is to some people. Like, they'll see a 15-inch bass and assume that's a 5-pounder because they've never really seen a 5-pounder.
Right.
So when Gabe hooked that, I looked at him and was like, is it a 5-pounder?
That's great. No, yeah. It's great stuff.
So, yeah, 10 Horse Monty, man, he's got lots of content on his own, but me and him, you know, there's new videos coming out every couple days, every 3 or 4 or 5 days, so... and I know he's getting ready to go down to Lake Egypt to film on Sunday to get some stuff down there. So,
yeah, that's great. I can't recommend it enough. 10 Horse Monty on YouTube. You can see a lot of Mike's experiences out there on the water, and you can hear the Mike and those other guys in 10 Horse talk about their time on the water and get some really great information.
The live stream's great too. And if you haven't checked that out, and you're a fisherman, it's nice because you can log in as it's going live and ask questions.
Yep.
You can type in and ask questions.
Which I did.
Hey, did you see the Second Amendment radio shirt I hung up in the back? Very hillbilly, yeah. But it was in the background there for the live.
I loved it. And, I asked my question, and he plugged our show, too. And I can't thank you guys enough for that. That was really, really good stuff.
I promise you, all their subscribers are probably going to be listening to your show because they're all super cool people.
That's great. That's great.
They're
we'll
loyal. They're there every Monday night waiting for us to start.
That's so cool. Well, Mike Marfell, thank you so much. I love any opportunity to talk a little fishing, and we'll have you back again real soon.
All right, let's get out there and go fishing sometime, Tony. We've been threatening it.
Amen.
We've got to do it this fall.
All right.
Thanks, guys. I'll meet have
you.
A great week.
See you, Mike.
I'll meet you at Bo's house in about a half hour.
Yeah, all right. Come by and get me. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Mike, thanks a lot. All right, that's going to do it. We're going to wrap up this edition of the podcast exclusive. Big thank you to Mike Marfell and for producer Chad Ellis and Bo Matthews. I'm Tony Colombo. Thank you for listening to another edition of the podcast exclusive of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Get more at 971talk.com.